All right, so we're diving into 1 and 2 Samuel today. Great choice, I gotta say. We've got your notes and Dr. Chisholm's lecture ready. We are all set to explore...
100 years.
Yeah, 100 years of biblical history.
Wow.
But this isn't just like names and dates, you know. This is about how Israel goes from every tribe for themselves to having a king.
Right.
And like all the drama that came with that.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is where these books land... in the Hebrew Bible.
Okay.
They're not in the history section. They're part of the former prophets.
Oh, okay. Now that's interesting. So it's like their history, but through a certain lens.
Yeah.
What makes them prophetic?
Well, it's history, but it's making an argument.
Okay.
Think of it as God's commentary on the rise and fall of kings, showing how their actions measure up or don't to divine standards.
I like that. So we're starting just after the book of Judges, right?
Right.
And if I remember correctly, things weren't exactly peaceful back then.
No Judges ends with chaos.
Let's do that.
Total chaos. Everyone doing their own thing. No real leadership.
Yeah.
The Israelites are desperate for someone to unite them.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that desire, it seems like it's hardwired into us as humans.
Yeah.
Especially when things feel uncertain.
Right.
So that sets the stage for 1 and 2 Samuel.
Exactly.
This search for a king. But these books are also really deeply connected to Deuteronomy, right?
Absolutely.
Which is all about the laws, including the rules for kingship.
Exactly. Deuteronomy lays out this blueprint for the ideal king.
Right.
Someone who's supposed to be humble, devoted to God's law.
Yeah.
Not amassing wealth and power for themselves.
Which, let's be honest, often clashes with the reality of how humans actually behave, right?
All the time.
I mean, power, it can be intoxicating, especially when you've got like a whole nation looking to you for leadership.
That tension is at the heart of these books, and it's why scholars sometimes call this section of the Bible from Joshua to Kings the Deuteronomic history. It's like a giant courtroom drama where the kings are judged against those laws laid out in Deuteronomy.
I love that. Okay, so we've got this backdrop, a craving for a king, and this like divine standard that's pretty hard to live up to.
For sure.
Now let's meet the main players. Dr. Chisholm highlights 3 big personalities, Samuel, Saul, and David.
Yeah, these aren't just names.
Right.
They're characters who come to life in these stories.
Right.
We have Samuel, the prophet chosen by God to anoint the very first kings of Israel.
Wow.
Imagine that responsibility, picking the person who will lead the entire nation.
Talk about pressure. And then there's Saul, the first king.
Yeah.
He's described as this, like, impressive figure.
Yes.
But it sounds like things don't go so well for him.
No. Saul is initially everything that people wanted in a king. Tall, handsome, a powerful warrior. But he ends up being a tragic figure, someone who fails to live up to those divine standards we were talking about.
And then we have David.
Ew.
He's almost like the underdog in this story.
Well, David's introduced as this shepherd boy who slays a giant.
Right.
He's brave, charismatic,
yeah,
and clearly favored by God. But he's also shown to have flaws.
Yeah.
Which makes him feel more human.
More relatable, right.
Much more relatable.
Yeah, it sounds like these books aren't just neutral history, though.
No.
They seem to be making an argument in favor of David's kingship.
You're picking up on something crucial. Scholars actually talk about this apology for David that runs through these books.
Okay.
It's not that they ignore his mistakes. We'll get to those. But they defend his right to rule despite his failings.
But wait, if David is portrayed as this flawed human being...
Right.
Why go to such lengths to defend him? What makes him so special?
That's where the covenant God makes with David becomes central.
Okay.
God promises that David's dynasty will last forever.
Mm.
That his descendants will rule Israel.
Wow.
This promise creates a kind of theological safety net for David, even when he really messes up.
So we've got human ambition.
Uh-huh.
We've got divine promises.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of drama in between.
Definitely.
Now, Dr. Chisholm's lecture outlined a fascinating structure for these books. He calls it a theological drama with several acts.
He's right. It's not just chronological retelling.
Okay.
He begins with Prelude to Kingship, 1 Samuel chapters 1 through 7, where we see the rise of Samuel and the growing desire for a king.
Okay. So setting the stage for everything that follows.
Exactly.
Or what?
Then we move to Kingship Inaugurated.
Yeah.
1 Samuel chapters 8 through 12, where Saul takes center stage.
Ah, so that's where this grand experiment with kingship really begins.
Yes.
But I'm guessing it doesn't go as smoothly as everyone hoped?
It does not.
Okay.
Saul makes some critical mistakes revealing his lack of trust in God.
Uh-oh.
And that leads us to Kingship Fails, 1 Samuel 13 through 15, where Saul's reign starts to unravel.
Ooh, things are getting messy. I can already feel the tension building.
Yeah, and then it gets even more complicated with kingship in limbo. 1 Samuel 16 through 31. David has been chosen by God, but Saul's still clinging to power. Talk about an awkward situation.
Imagine being David. You know, you're destined to be king,
Yeah.
but you have to wait for the current king to, exit the stage.
Yeah, it creates this incredible tension and some of the most gripping stories in the Bible. Think David and Goliath. David's friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan. Saul's attempts to kill David out of jealousy.
It's like a political thriller, but with divine intervention thrown into the mix.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got Saul the rejected king
Yeah.
and David the chosen successor
Right.
caught in this power struggle. But what happens when Saul's reign finally comes to an end? How does David handle that transition?
That's where we'll pick up next time. We'll see how kingship in limbo gives way to kingship revived and explore what kind of leader David becomes.
We're back and ready to dive even deeper into the world of 1 and 2 Samuel. Last time we talked about how these books are like God's commentary on kingship,
Right.
judging the kings against those idealistic standards set out in Deuteronomy.
Exactly. And we left off with this tension-filled situation. Saul, the king who's lost God's favor, but still holding on to power. And David, the chosen successor, waiting in the wings.
Yeah, it's like a ticking time bomb waiting to explode.
It is.
But before we get to that explosion, let's rewind a bit. We've talked about Saul and David. But
Right.
what about Samuel? He's the one who kicks off this whole kingship drama.
Absolutely. Samuel is the bridge between the chaotic period of the judges and the era of kings. And his story is actually pretty fascinating. It begins with a mother's desperate prayer.
Now I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
Samuel's mother, Hannah, was unable to have children, and she prayed so fervently for a child that she promised to dedicate him to God's service if her prayer was answered.
Wow, that's a serious vow, and it worked.
It did. Samuel was born, and Hannah kept her promise. She brought him to the tabernacle at Shiloh to serve under Eli, the high priest. Imagine that sacrifice, giving up your child to serve God.
I mean, it really shows her faith.
Right.
But wasn't there something you mentioned earlier about a bittersweet twist to Samuel's upbringing?
Right. This is where it gets interesting. Eli's sons, who were also priests, were corrupt. They were abusing their power and basically making a mockery of their religious duties.
So you've got Samuel, this child dedicated to God,
Yeah.
growing up in a system that's tainted by corruption. It's like he's surrounded by bad examples.
Yes. And it really highlights the importance of Samuel's own character. He remains faithful to God despite the failings of those around him. And it's this faithfulness that prepares him for his unique role.
Okay, but how does he go from being a faithful servant in the tabernacle to anointing kings?
Right.
That's a pretty big leap.
Well, one night, young Samuel hears a voice calling his name. He thinks it's Eli, but it turns out to be God speaking directly to him.
Wow, talk about a wake-up call.
Right.
I can't imagine what that must have been like.
It's a pivotal moment. From that point on, Samuel is recognized as a prophet, a spokesperson for God, and is this authority that gives him the legitimacy to anoint the first king, even though he's personally not thrilled about the idea.
That's right. If I remember correctly, Samuel actually warns the people about the dangers of having a king right. He tells them that a king will tax them, draft their sons into his army. It doesn't sound like a very appealing proposition.
He's basically saying, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
But the Israelites are insistent they want a king, like all the other nations. They're tired of being vulnerable,
Yeah.
being picked on by their enemies.
So Samuel reluctantly gives in to their demands,
He
and
does.
he anoints Saul as the first king of Israel.
Right.
But as we discussed earlier, Saul doesn't exactly live up to the ideal.
He does not.
So what kind of mistakes does he make that lead to his downfall?
Well, there are two key incidents that really seal his fate. The first one involves a battle against the Philistines. Samuel tells Saul to wait for him to offer a sacrifice before going into battle.
It sounds like a pretty straightforward instruction.
It is.
Wait for the prophet to get things started with God.
Exactly. But Saul gets impatient
Oh, no.
and decides to offer the sacrifice himself. He figures, why wait? I am the king. I can handle this.
Oh, that sounds like a big overstep.
It is.
It's like he's putting himself in God's place.
And that's exactly how Samuel sees it.
Yeah.
He rebukes Saul for his disobedience, telling him that this act of arrogance will cost him the kingdom.
So Saul's reign is already on shaky ground.
Right.
And then comes the second big mistake.
Right. This time, it involves a battle against the Amalekites.
Okay.
God commands Saul to completely destroy them.
Wow.
Their people, their livestock, everything.
That sounds harsh, but I guess in ancient warfare, those kinds of things happened.
Yeah, the point is that this was a direct command from God.
Okay.
A test of Saul's obedience.
Right.
But Saul fails the test.
Mm.
He spares the Amalekite king and keeps some of the best plunder for himself.
So once again, he's putting his own judgment above God's command.
Exactly.
He's thinking, I know better than God what should be spared.
Exactly. It's a clear pattern of disobedience.
Yeah.
And this time, the consequences are even more severe.
Okay.
Samuel tells Saul that God has rejected him as king.
Wow, that's got a sting. But if Saul's rejected, why does he continue to reign for a while?
That's where we enter the period Dr. Chisholm calls kingship in limbo.
Right.
God has chosen a new king, David. But Saul is still on the throne, creating this incredibly tense and complicated situation.
Yeah, it's like a power vacuum waiting to be filled.
Exactly.
And in the meantime, you've got these two figures, Saul the fading king and David the rising star, circling each other, wary and suspicious.
It leads to some of the most dramatic episodes in the Bible, David and Goliath.
Right.
David's close friendship with Saul's son, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Saul's attempts to kill David out of jealousy.
Okay, I'm ready to dive into that drama. Tell me more about David and Goliath.
Sure.
It's such an iconic story.
It is.
But I'm curious to hear how it fits into the larger narrative of David's rise to power.
Okay, David and Goliath. Everyone knows that story, right?
Yeah.
Little guy taking down the giant. But I have a feeling there's more to it than meets the eye.
Right.
Especially when we consider what's going on with Saul at the time.
Oh, you're absolutely right. This isn't just a children's story about bravery.
Right.
It's a symbolic showdown between Saul's failing kingship and David's divinely ordained future.
Okay.
You know, remember, Saul was chosen partly because he was impressive physically.
Yeah.
But he totally crumbles in fear when he faces Goliath.
Yeah. It's like his outward appearance doesn't match his inner strength.
Exactly.
And then you have David, this shepherd boy.
Right.
Who, like, steps up with complete confidence.
Exactly. And it's not just confidence in his own abilities. You know,
right.
David's famous line, "You come against me with sword and spear, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty."
It shows where his true strength lies. In his faith.
Mm.
This is why this story is so powerful.
Yeah.
David's victory over Goliath.
Yeah.
It's not just a military win. It's a sign that God is with him.
Yeah. It's almost like God's putting an exclamation point on David's destiny.
Exactly.
But even though he's not officially king yet.
Right.
But as we know, Saul doesn't exactly step aside gracefully.
No, he does not.
Yeah.
Saul becomes consumed by jealousy and paranoia.
Yeah.
Seeing David as a threat.
Right.
He even tries to kill David on multiple occasions. It's this twisted dynamic where the current king is trying to eliminate the future king.
Oh, man. Talk about a dysfunctional family.
Right.
It's like a slow motion train wreck you can't look away from. You've got David constantly on guard, having to flee for his life.
Right.
It's amazing he survives this period at all.
It's a testament to his resilience.
Yeah.
And also to God's protection.
Right. But here's something I find really fascinating.
Yeah.
Even though Saul's hunting him down.
Right.
David has several opportunities to kill Saul.
He does.
To take the throne by force.
Uh-huh.
But he refuses.
He does.
That's surprising. Why wouldn't he take advantage of those opportunities?
Why?
I mean, it would seem like the logical thing to do.
It shows David's deep respect for the institution of kingship.
Okay.
Even though Saul has become this tyrant.
Right.
He's still God's anointed king.
Right, right.
David's essentially saying, it's not my place to remove him. God will handle that.
It's like he's playing the long game,
yeah.
Trusting that God will make a way for him to become king at the right time.
And that's precisely what happens.
Yeah.
Saul eventually dies in battle.
Okay.
And David, even though he had every reason to celebrate,
yeah.
He actually mourns Saul's death.
Ow.
He even composes a lament, a song of mourning, that highlights Saul's good qualities.
It's an amazing display of humility and grace.
It is.
He's not like gloating over his enemy's demise.
Right.
He's acknowledging the tragedy of Saul's life.
It's one of the reasons David is described as a man after God's own heart.
Mm.
He's not perfect.
Right.
But he has this capacity for compassion and loyalty.
Yeah.
Even towards those who've wronged him.
So with Saul out of the picture, we enter the next phase in Dr. Chisholm's framework, kingship revived.
Yes.
Tell us about David's reign. What kind of leader does he become?
David's early reign is marked by success.
Okay.
He unifies the tribes, conquers Jerusalem, establishes a strong central government, and expands Israel's borders.
Wow.
He's a brilliant military strategist, a skillful politician, and even a gifted poet, writing many of the Psalms.
He's like the ultimate multi-talented leader.
He is.
But we also know that David isn't a saint.
No.
There's that whole episode with Bathsheba and Uriah, a story that still has the power to shock us.
That's where we enter the phase that Dr. Chisholm calls kingship preserved.
Okay.
It's a stark reminder that even the most divinely favored individuals are capable of terrible transgressions.
Right. David, the hero king,
succumbs
to temptation, commits adultery, and then tries to cover it up by arranging for Bathsheba's husband to be killed in battle.
Right.
It's a dark moment, not just for David, but for the whole idea of kingship.
And the consequences are severe.
Yeah.
The prophet Nathan confronts David with his sin in a very dramatic way.
Mm.
And God brings judgment upon David's house.
But even though David is punished, God doesn't abandon him or revoke his kingship.
No.
And I think this is where that unconditional covenant we talked about earlier comes into play.
Exactly. God had promised David that his dynasty would endure forever.
Yeah.
And that promise serves as a kind of lifeline, even when David makes these colossal mistakes.
Right.
It's not that God condones David's actions.
Right.
But it shows the enduring power of God's grace and commitment.
Yeah, it's a powerful reminder that God works through flawed human beings, that even those chosen for greatness are capable of falling short.
Right.
And then at the end of 2 Samuel, there's that intriguing epilogue that Dr. Chisholm calls a microcosm of David's reign. What's the significance of those final chapters?
Well, those chapters aren't in chronological order.
Okay.
But they offer this final reflection on David's life and reign.
Perfect.
They revisit key themes.
Yeah.
Highlighting both his triumphs and his failings.
Hmm.
It's like the narrator saying, here's the full picture, the good, the bad, and the messy.
So it's not trying to whitewash David's story.
No.
But to present him in all his complexity.
Exactly. David was an extraordinary leader.
Right.
Chosen by God for a special purpose.
Yeah.
He achieved great things.
Yeah.
But he also made terrible mistakes.
Right.
His story's a reminder that leadership is a journey, not a destination. And that even the most gifted leaders are in constant need of God's grace.
So we've journeyed from the chaos of the judges to the rise and fall of Saul.
Right.
And finally, the complex and compelling reign of David
right.
has been quite a ride.
It has.
What's the takeaway for us today, thousands of years later? What can we learn from these ancient stories?
Well, these books offer timeless insights into the nature of leadership.
Okay.
The consequences of our choices.
Mm.
And the enduring power of God's covenant.
Yeah.
They invite us to reflect on our own lives, our own ambitions,
right.
and our own relationship with the divine.
Yeah, it's a reminder that we're all flawed human beings, capable of both great and terrible things.
Right.
But amidst our imperfections, God's grace can work wonders.
And perhaps that's the most enduring message of these books.
Okay.
Even in the midst of our brokenness, God's purposes prevail.
That's a powerful thought to leave us with.
It is.
Thanks for guiding us through this deep dive into 1 and 2 Samuel.
You're welcome.
I have a feeling I'll never look at these stories the same way again.
That's great.
Well, we'll be back to explore more fascinating topics on the next episode of The Deep Dive.